Namaste, hello.
Oh, here. Namaste, hello, beloved.
Oh, hello. So nice to see you. Wonderful background there.
You too.
Very nice. I just clicked on your Facebook page there a moment ago, and I think your cover photograph was like Muji's hand, like touching your hand to your heart, and I just felt like that was beautiful.
That was a very special moment. I still remember it. It was in Zimar. And we were all just sitting outside after a meditation, and he came straight and put his hand there.
Yeah.
And actually, it has been so. It has been every single time that I have met him or been in his presence. Some transformation takes place.
Yeah,
not here but somewhere.
Yeah, I feel that. It's like we can't really put words to that type of thing, because maybe we don't know, but we just know ourselves, like something is happening or shifting, or like it's true.
It's
true. I always say
dissolving. Something dissolving, something melting.
Exactly. I experienced that too. I feel like I really don't understand, but I definitely would always encourage anybody to be in the presence of Muji or whoever they feel called to. I think it's always a good thing.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, these things are not even something we plan or will or can plan or will.
Yeah.
It really is... I mean, one has heard these things so many times before. When the student is ready, the master appears.
Yeah.
But when it happens to you, when your master actually comes to you, that you realize how divinely orchestrated it is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in this lifetime, I've had the honor to meet so many masters. I met Osho in my younger days, when I didn't really understand the value even of meeting him.
Yeah.
Met Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. I met Sadhguru Jaggi Vasudev. I met Thich Nhat Hanh. I met so many masters in this lifetime, but somehow I just felt like, I don't know whether I will have a living master in this lifetime.
Yeah.
And I began to feel that I'm the one who set parameters, you know. My master should be like this, and my master should exude joy, and my master should. But so I don't deserve one. And then I saw Muji on YouTube, and you know, Amba, love, sweetheart, I had been for a 40-day retreat. It was an Osho retreat down south in India. And when I came out from there, a friend of mine who was with me asked me, she said, do you take this person who conducted this retreat to be your master? And somehow I just, like a no came out of me. I can only say came out of me because we were just out of silence. I was not, my brain was not working. Then she said, you wish you had a living master. And then again the word said, if I had a living master, it would be someone like Muji. And then I thought to my, I mean, you know, I listened to the words and I thought, oh, is that what you think? Okay. And then I remember I came and I told a friend of mine, I said, you know, these words came out of me. So don't you think I should make an effort to go and meet this person, this being? Said, yeah, you should go. So I said, but where? So he said, where? He comes in Thiruvannamalai, you go there. I said, okay. And maybe a month later, the same person called me back and he said, guess who's coming to Rishikesh? You know, and for someone living in Delhi, it's like Thiruvannamalai is far, but Rishikesh is next door. Then I don't know. And he said, guess. I said, I don't know. And he said, Muji. And you know, as I was listening, I was holding the phone and I was speaking to him and there were like tears flowing down. And what's happening here? And that's how I met him. That's how, when the first time he came to Rishikesh, on the first day that he had satsang, and actually I met him one day before because we just went to that ashram where he was, and I had a most magical meeting with him.
Just to hear you sharing it, your words and presence, I don't know, is really touching my heart. Like I feel like crying to just to just hear it like this.
I mean, it was, you know, those days, Amba, love, sweetheart, there was like not much security. There was like nothing. I mean, we just went in that. And I don't know if you've been to Rishikesh, but if you've been, you know, like how it is now. But we just went to see where would satsang be, and pushed open the gate. Mm-hmm. And there was a young boy there, and he said, yes, what can I do for you? And I said, oh, I've come to meet Muji. And he said, does he know you? And I never met him before, but like something in my heart said, yeah, he knows me. And he said, oh, who shall I say has come? I said, tell him Rohini from Delhi. I mean, how cheeky is that? But I just said, tell him Rohini from Delhi. And he said, okay. And then he said, but if he's resting, I won't disturb him. I said, it's a deal. So he went in and he came back and he said, he's resting. I said, okay. And I'm turning back, you know, to leave. And he says, don't you want to wait for him? And I said, oh, yes. And he brings me a chair. And I like sit down in that, you know, that same place where satsang is held now. Uh-huh. I'm sitting outside and there's two other people with me. And I'm saying to that other person, you know, we've been listening to Muji for like 8 or 9 months now. I think he should come out in 8 or 9 minutes. So whatever I'm sharing with you is very confidential.
Yeah.
Just like sister to sister.
Yeah.
And I said, 8 or 9 minutes now. Mm. And sure enough, I think 7 or 8 minutes later, there he was.
Mm.
And, you know, I just got up and without, let's say, any inhibition, I just ran to him and he just hugged me. And I wept like I have never wept before. And then when I stopped weeping a little bit, I said to him, I said, I have not come to ask you any questions. I've just come to say to you what you said to your master. And he said, what did I say? I said, you said, chop off my head. And that's what I'm telling you.
I don't know why it's making me cry.
Yeah. It was like, and I just
cry with joy.
And in that moment, you know, I just recognized that this exactly is how you meet a master. This exactly. You know? And I just like wept. And then I said, I just feel like touching your feet. And you know, it was till that moment I had never felt this feeling of like bowing before someone and like receiving him in your heart. And at the end of that satsang, you know, I just sat down and I wrote a letter. And in the letter, I just wrote that, you know, that first day when I saw you, I just ran to you without shame, without inhibition, without asking your permission. And you know what, Muji Baba? I realized that I was not running to a form. I was running to the embodiment of love and freedom. And I understand now that love and freedom is always waiting for you with open arms, as for you, waiting to embrace the child who went away. And I said, so I cannot thank you enough for this meeting of consciousness with consciousness. And you know, Amba, love, just at the end of satsang that week, I just stood in the darshan line, which used to be very short mm-hmm. at that time.
Yeah.
And when he passed by, I just gave him the letter and I said, "This is for you, Muji Baba." And it was so complete for me. Mm-hmm. Then I was sitting outside and later somebody told me that, you know, he read your letter and he asked, where is this person? Where is she? But I didn't need to hear anything more.
Yeah.
It was just so full and so complete. And yeah, that was my meeting with my master and my journey.
That's a beautiful.
Getting a very definite compass.
Yeah.
I mean, we are all on our journeys home. There is no other purpose for being.
Mm.
You know?
I like when you said there, you know, when you met Moody, you weren't meeting a person, but you were just like, I don't know what words you used exactly, but you were just running into the arms of love. Yeah. Something. And you said you are also that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, like we are this home and everything that appears within us, you know, all the seeming problems and seeming troubles. I feel like this is just the way I've been starting to think lately. Like all of those seeming troubles, you know, like they're all returning home to ourself, like our heart, our just life itself.
Yeah. It's so true, you know, it's just depends like what lens are we looking through. Like these same, I mean, situations come up, they come up like they're always there for our awakening and healing, but we may not see them as such. At a certain point in life, it may close you down.
Mm.
At a certain point in life, you may understand that, oh yeah, I'm feeling this. So maybe this lesson has come because I need to handle this emotion or that emotion, or you know, I need to forgive, or I need to. So we've all been in stages where we have felt that way.
Mm.
And then you happen to be brought, grace brings you to that point where the journey itself changes.
Mm.
From fixing the person or becoming a better person to dissolving the person.
Yeah.
And that's really that. You could say the last phase or the first phase, whatever you call it, of the journey. You know? And as you begin to like, and I mean, I often, you know, sometimes you in your Sangha, you meet somebody who says, oh, I'm not sure that this is the journey for me. I mean, nothing's happening. And I just say to them, do you have a living master holding your hand?
Yeah.
And if you do, you don't need any more proof.
Yeah.
You just know that you have been, grace has brought you here. And even if you may think that your energy is being wasted, it will never waste the energy of an enlightened being.
Yeah.
He's here because we are ready. So just, you know, stay put. So now when one looks at something which happens in life, one can only see it as one thing, which is pushing you towards your awakening.
Yeah.
You know, I had a tough test just now because through these 2 years, 3 years of COVID, I never contracted COVID mm-hmm. in this whole time. And my daughter finally, who lives in Canada, said, hey, mom, how about coming to visit us now? And so I came. And Amba, love, sweetheart, as soon as I reached here, I tested positive. Huh? So now imagine I have landed,
mm.
I've reached home,
mm.
and I'm isolated in the basement.
Oh.
I can hear my grandchildren, one of whom I had not met till this point.
Oh.
He was born 1.5 years back.
Mm.
I can hear them playing right above my head, and I cannot reach them.
Oh no, that is a test, sorry.
So now if you think of it, you may think like, oh my goodness. But what I think was, hey, Muji Baba, thank you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was just those pointings of stay here. Because if I had listened to my mind, I would have gone mad. It was 12 days of isolation. I would have just gone crazy because it was definitely wanting to tell me lots of things. But it was like, just take your attention away. So it was 11 days of like really being brought back here.
Yeah.
You know, and coming into instant peace from what could have been instant turmoil.
Yeah.
And then you really, I mean, you really begin to understand that grace comes in so many packages.
Yeah. Do you find life continues to show us like the true stories? Like, so this story comes or that story can come. And it's just to kind of strengthen, isn't it? To strengthen that there's never, we never find peace in the mind, and it maybe continues to throw up a story, an idea. So these kind of stories, they're actually then we can kind of be grateful because they're growing our roots deeper down into the ground.
Absolutely. And I mean, this time it was really such a clear experiential, you know. So the understanding is later, but there is a knowing already inside. But it was so clearly felt and known that you can choose your intrinsic nature, which is peace, or you can choose to hold the mind's hand and go playing in the park.
Yeah.
It's up to you. And you can have instantly, you can be moved back to a place of non-happening.
Yeah.
Or you can like proceed out of your house of being and go and play, and it's fine to play. But you know what? It's better to play when you know where you belong. Because we have just been playing for a long time and we have forgotten that we have home.
Yeah. And I don't know if you'd like to say something about this. This is just what's coming to my mind. You know, many people that go to satsang with Muji or maybe other teachers as well, they do experience, this is just for lack of better words, these are the words I use, but they do experience and recognize the truth of who they are.
Yeah.
And I think it's not difficult, like, and many, many, many people do. Yeah. But yeah, when a story arises, they kind of seem to forget. They seem to forget and they seem to get caught up in that. So when people talk to me about that, the kind of things that usually come is I usually feel like to just continue to choose your heart over and over and over and over again. And the more you kind of do that, you're kind of, then it starts to just happen by itself in a way. Like you don't really even have to choose so much anymore. It's just here.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. And I think perhaps what we don't always recognize is that it too is a process. Even though we are here, we have always been here, we are home.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it is like saying like we went away from home. We went away. And that going away became a habit. It became like almost like a reflex. It became like, you know, that's what we choose, the seduction of the mind. Or we feel that that is more real than this. That change, that drama, that all of that is more real. So we give attention to it. But now it is slowly withdrawing. And, you know, it is like, I mean, it is like an like how an attraction grows. Like, let's say you just met a new person and you feel attracted, but there's no familiarity yet. But then slowly and gradually you begin to love being with that person. Yeah. And then you realize that I am in love. And then you realize that, oh, I can't think of anything else. I mean, nobody has to remind me to think of him or her. I mean, I just am in love. And I think it's that process of, you know, falling in love and realizing that it is yourself and that you have always, but that comes slowly and gradually. And I think really, as you said, what keeps you there is the good feeling.
Yeah.
You know, the feeling of being home, good feeling is not a way to put it, but just the familiarity of, oh, yes, and being able to, you know, like breathe a sigh and say, like, yeah, I like love being here. I like, and that love is what, you know, the love, the familiarity, the recognition of where you have always been, that slowly begins to wash away the rest. It's not a fight. It's not a fight. In fact, it's all only grace. I don't think we can even choose it.
Yeah.
It's like grace brings you to that point, grace. And when you begin to really understand that, then a lot of the stress and strife of, because even spiritual journeys have a lot of doingness in them at a certain stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are doing things. We are like, I'm also one of them who did a lot of workshops, who learned a lot of therapies, who, you know, gained from all those therapies, who felt the benefit of them. But then one day I found myself asking, like, hey, am I on another treadmill? I stepped off one treadmill, but what is this, you know, constant need for? And how come people come to workshops and say, oh, I feel whole and complete? So does wholeness go away? Does completeness go away?
Yeah.
So what are we doing here? And I think I must have prayed at that point. I had not met Muji Baba, but I think I prayed for 2 years saying, look, if this is my path, I'm so happy here. But some little voice inside, in the midst of this, actually not turmoil, but supreme contentment, is telling me that there's something more.
Yeah.
So is there? Show me.
Yeah.
And then my whole path shifted, you know.
Mm.
And when you come onto this final path, so to say, final path that where you've always been. I mean, isn't it so relieving to be able to talk this cookie language with someone and to know they understand perfectly? It's like, and yeah, to like, you know, and then there's a knowingness that keeps you there. There's a knowingness and recognition of the truth.
Mm.
A resonance.
Yeah.
And when you say the word resonance, obviously it implies two things. Something inside knows something that is being presented to you.
Mm.
And there's a big restfulness and settling.
Mm.
And yet it's a process. The other day, Muji Baba described it very beautifully to someone, because he was speaking of that water drop, you know, that falls into the bucket.
Yeah.
But it hops right back out.
Yeah.
And then it goes back in and it dissolves some more and it hops right back out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until it fully dissolves.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that sometimes we get confused because the master is saying, like, you are here.
Like, yeah.
You know, and then you find yourself again being attracted to those things that attracted you before.
I think many people get confused like this in, because of course, when we recognize our true self, you recognize that it's none of the story that's in the world, not even the one that's seemingly waking up to this, like that's not it. So then we kind of can get confused between where does this life story fit in, even the story of awakening and all, and whatever else is in that like human journey story. And I think sometimes people can just kind of dismiss it altogether and look only towards self-recognition and completely neglect the life. And that means, or it might mean, it might mean like bad behavior and all of this kind of thing. So I guess that's really a big part of the exploration through these podcasts, and kind of what I like to hear different people talking about, is that, like, I feel like it's really very important to somehow be very inclusive of the whole of the human. So even though we know, like, true self-recognition, we get to see that this human is not what we thought it was, you know, and it's not, we're not one individual, but yet somehow the play still continues. And I just feel like it's so important to not abandon any part of the human story. But I feel like, it's just the way I think about it and talk about it, is like to bring our light from that recognition into all the parts of our life, and just how important it is to really to include everything. And I don't even know why it's important. If someone said, why is it important? I don't know why. It just feels important. And it's, I've always been, you use the word as well, whole. You know, yes. Like someone comes to a workshop and they feel whole and complete. But is that whole and completeness not there all the time? Yeah. So it's kind of like, yeah, it is, like we are whole and complete all the time. But then there's a kind of a, but yet there's this part of us that's also whole and complete. I think this is also whole and complete, but somehow I think it just, it wants to be allowed. I don't know if it wants, but maybe you can say whatever arises in you, but maybe it wants to just to be allowed. Like, so there's no resistance to that at all. So it's kind of fully included and embraced within the wholeness. And I don't think even in this, I'm putting it over here as if it's somewhere else, but even in this, the human story, I don't think that's becoming whole. I think like it's important to recognize even when we seem broken, like, you know, like maybe like someone is feeling very upset about something that happened or something, but that doesn't mean anything. Like it, that doesn't mean that it's not whole. Like that's wholeness expressing as upset or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I just feel like it's important to bring attention to all of that. Like,
oh yes. I mean, I love the metaphor of the, you know, the ocean,
yeah,
and the waves. And let's say there's a storm, and let's say that the movement, you know, at the top of the ocean, the waves are like rough and there's like a lot of movement. And but if you went to the depths of the ocean, you would find stillness.
Mm.
And you would find it simultaneously. It's not that you have to wait for the storm to end to find stillness.
Yeah.
The stillness, in fact, is always there, always steady, or that non-happening place.
Mm.
And there's movement.
Yeah.
So you can choose to understand that, oh, the movement is the only thing there is.
Mm.
Then I think we have many lifetimes, and in this lifetime, certainly we know that there have been times when we have been caught in that movement, yeah, and trying to control that movement. And now when you stand back and you look at it and you think, controlling the movement of the waves?
Yeah.
Like how? Like what? What did you think? But we have spent so much energy on that. Yeah. And yet you can let it be as it is, which was a very liberating moment for me. Because yeah, it was like, let it be. Let the storm be. You just go down to the stillness because it's there too.
Mm.
And that is not changing.
Yeah.
Be there.
Mm.
Pray for grace to help you recognize that that is where I want to be. So yeah, that's like, I mean, it's a very beautiful metaphor, which is very inclusive because the wave is part of the ocean. But yeah, it, the wave perhaps thinks it's only a wave. But when you begin to realize that all these elements are there, and yes, is the wave important? Yes, I think in the human journey, it is indeed important, because wholeness, however it is, it's a very divine game. But to recognize wholeness, you need to be separate.
Mm.
You need to experience separation, and in the separation, come back to wholeness.
Yeah.
Like, let's say you finish with this lifetime and you go back to where you came from, which is wholeness.
Mm.
So how come, like, I mean, why then do we forget?
Mm.
But we forget. And that's the worth of the body.
Mm.
It gives you the separation and the contraction and the experiencing that helps you transcend experiencing.
Yeah.
And then include experiencing. And I think it's like completely joyous. It's completely joyous to experience, but knowing your true place. Yeah. Understanding that you are not the experiencing alone.
Yes.
And yet there is a dynamic existence. You have a dynamic existence. And it's fine to let the dynamic existence also flow.
Mm.
But it's not your problem, because there's a script.
Mm-hmm.
There's a script. Let the script unfold exactly how it's unfolding.
Yeah.
But if you are not like involved in it as it,
mm,
then it's very joyous to watch. It's yeah, like really, like, you know, sometimes you have to marvel at the what shall I say, the miraculousness and the benevolence and the customization, let's say, of each life plan.
Yeah.
Built specifically for that being.
Somehow when you're talking as well, it's like, I'm probably just going to say the exact same as you in a different way, but it's like experiencing can be there, but in a detached way. But somehow when we're detached from the control and, I don't know, not really caring. I have to find a different word for caring, but I'll just say caring for now. Caring about the experience too much, like it matters so much. So it's almost like we kind of let go of needing experience to be a certain way. But then there is still, there's a great experience then of ourself. Like we're actually experiencing ourselves. And I think that's what we really want, you know, when we, even though it kind of, it sounds, it's a very paradoxical thing to say, I think, because it's like, I think when we really have that prayer in our heart, like you said, you prayed for like 2 years for a master, like what do we really want? Because we hear, you've probably heard so many times through all those really great teachers that you met, like the truth of who you are is beyond this world and all of that. And it doesn't mean anything if we're not experiencing it. So it's some type of, well, it's an experience. It's a very real experience.
It is.
That's what we want. And I feel like it's, or at least in, maybe it's just where I am in my seeming journey, is that it seems to be like an ongoing thing. So even though there can be great clarity, you know, in the heart about like, I'm not a person, I'm not a, not the stories of the mind, the experiencing can continue to deepen and deepen, like the experiencing of your true self, you know, because, well, the thing is that that's also a way of thinking, because you're always experiencing your true self, but maybe just the, like that's the whole thing, actually, there's nothing else to experience. We're always experiencing our true self. So we're just kind of, the only thing is really coming out of the mind. That's the only thing, isn't it?
It's like, I mean, it is... It is the plan of consciousness to recognize itself fully.
Yeah.
This whole dynamic existence is also, it's just consciousness playing out things in a certain way. It's also consciousness.
Yeah.
But there's a dynamic aspect to it, and it's playing this out. And my, really, my firmest belief is that everything is in our favor, in the favor of awakening. Our favor means going back home, recognizing that we never left, whatever the words are, always not very accurate, but it's just, it's also consciousness. It's a play of consciousness. It's not really, and that's why I love the metaphor of the ocean, because there's no separation there. There's a seeming separation. That is, if the wave was to get up and speak to you and say, I'm a wave.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
But otherwise, where's the separation? There's movement, and that's the dynamic, and there's stillness, and that's the non-happening, the, you know, the eternal place. But it's all one. It's the same ocean. It's the same consciousness. It's the same awareness, call it whatever, which sometimes forms itself into movement, let's say.
Yeah.
Forms itself into the dynamic, and then rests again. And then forms again, and then rests again.
Yeah.
And you can say, oh, yes, yes, it's because of the moon, it's because of tides, it's because of the sun, it's because, yes, there are some external things which play and make you move. And but do you ever not be the ocean? No. And who thinks that you aren't? Only that wave which might think that, oh, I'm a wave, I'm the best one that is here, I'm the biggest. But only that. But somebody watching it will not think, oh, that's a wave separate from the ocean.
Yeah.
It's not. Because it isn't.
I have a question for you. And the question is really, I don't really know where it's coming from. But like, I do talk to different people and kind of about, you know, you said that you met a lot of different teachers and you were feeling quite whole and content, but then there was still a prayer for a teacher. So just specifically, I'm thinking of someone that I was talking to the other day, and they said that they don't really consider anyone their teacher, you know, but like I got the sense that they at least had some recognition of what satsang teachers, let's say, point to. So I don't know what the question is, but maybe the question is something like, like, what do you feel meeting your teacher, you know, what added kind of, I don't know, for lack of better words, thing, I can't find the word, but what added thing can having a teacher kind of support us in or something? What, I don't know.
So you know, it's not really better or worse or anything like that. It's like, there is already, grace has already laid out, let's say, the path. There may be somebody, and I was one of those people who felt for the longest time that, yeah, I think the teacher is within. I mean, I've met so many, but I have not really felt like this is my master. And that may be big arrogance on my part to say, but that's how it felt. And it was fine. And I was coming to the conclusion that, like, yes, I mean, life is a teacher. Life is the guru. My, you know, inner is the teacher. And it was just fine. It felt just fine like that too.
Mm-hmm.
But then this path opened up and a master appeared. I mean, in whose arms I felt myself crying. And I felt like the need to put my head down at his feet and say, you know, I put my head at your feet. It was not really an act of will, you know what I mean? It was just, it's an urge which moves through you. It's like actually your mind at that time is nowhere because it's not deciding, judging, nothing. It's just only your heart meeting another heart.
Yeah.
And yes, when you do have, if that is the path that is destined for you to have a living master, it feels like, I mean, you know, like the word guru is very representative. It's dispeller of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I would say that for one thing, you feel, okay, you have somebody who's pointing you, you know, somebody who's holding the compass for you and saying this way.
Yeah.
And if you are trusting, like how liberating it is, you know, because I'm a teacher to many.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a teacher to many. So I feel like the immense liberation of like being sitting at someone's feet and saying like, ah, I don't need to think here because I have a master who's telling me go this way.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. That's one is pointing. Mm. One is like a feeling of being protected. Like, and what I would say is you have somebody who will whack you if you're going the wrong way, you know? Like for me, my master is also someone who will, because, you know, on this path, you can really stray because of arrogance. I mean, the ego is such a, I mean, we can say, yes, I mean, nothing like the ego really exists, but the ego and the mind can play havoc with you. They can bring up arrogance.
Yeah.
They can bring up, like, you know, things which can distract you from your path. They can be a fall from grace. Yeah. And for me, I feel a master won't allow this to happen to you.
Yeah.
Like once you have, you know, taken someone as your master, you have given that stick to him. It's like, use it when you need it. Because for me, this life is dedicated to freedom. Please, Master, don't let me ever forget this. So, you know, it is.
I like this.
So many things.
I like this. It's like, it feels very true like that. And I feel like that about, like, Muji is also my master, but really also like Ananta. You probably know him.
Yes.
Disciple of Muji. And just like that, when you say that, like, there's no chance that you can really go back to the mind because you know that he's there for you. Like, you know that he's not going to let you go back. And it is like that. Like, there's always a chance. Like, and we see it happening. Like, you know, even just I've been in, let's say, the Sangha for I don't know how long, maybe 8 years or something, but you can see like Sangha friends come and go come and go, and maybe they're so full of love for a few years and then just the ego comes back in strongly and exactly. So it's possible.
Exactly. So, you know, that, like, I mean, it is, I mean, it's the responsibility of a teacher. And it's like, just, it feels like such a honor to be able to, like, put your head down and to, like, just, you know, relinquish this responsibility to someone who's ready to take it. And that's a master. That's a guru.
Hmm.
You know, that's a guru who can, who can, you know, it's like signing a contract. It's like signing a contract that, like, okay, you know, this life dedicated to freedom. Hmm. You need someone to witness it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, you know, I'm going to hold you to this. Hmm. You aren't going anywhere. And, like, if that be the case, like, I mean, what a gift.
Yeah.
What a gift, you know, till we need that supervision, so to say, or till we need that holding of space, to have someone who can hold that space for you is just, it's an incomparable blessing, I would say. Incomparable.
That's good choice of words. And I just want to reflect back and affirm, just for anybody who might be listening that doesn't have a teacher, that, like what you said at the beginning, that it's neither better nor worse. And maybe all of us have a different story and a different path, you know, for different reasons. So just because we haven't taken or accepted or acknowledged or noticed someone as our teacher, it doesn't mean that we can't live completely free.
Absolutely.
You know, so I just wanted to say that, because I know some people, maybe more especially in the West, we can get kind of confused, you know, like, because we maybe know lots of different spiritual teachers and maybe we think they're great and we trust them somewhat, but, like, still, if someone says, are they your teacher, you'd be like, no, I don't have a teacher.
I think the only thing actually to recognize is that grace is here.
Yes.
Grace is upon us, and it brings to each one exactly what is needed by that one.
Yes.
The goal is the same. There is no race. There is no rush. There is no urgency. Yes. We are all going the same way.
Yes.
But there are many ways to the top of the mountain. Somebody may be holding your hand. Somebody may not. Somebody may hold it for some time. They may let go, but all of it is in your favor, and all of it is only for one purpose.
Yeah.
Everything, whether it is that now you're experiencing, whether it is that you so-called feel, I fell off the path, whatever is happening to eventually just bring you home. And it's going to happen in its own time, already decided perhaps.
Mm.
So one can really, really relax, rest.
Yeah.
Like, whichever way it is happening is what is meant to be.
Yes.
And it's perfect. Not only meant to be, but perfect for that being.
Yes. Yeah. It's really very beautiful to talk to you. You know, I asked Muji to join me on this podcast recently.
Yeah.
I didn't ask him directly. I asked him through someone else. But the answer came back, no. And I just kind of trust, you know, as well, whatever happens is right. But I kind of see, even, or I have the sense, like, talking to you, I feel like if I was talking to Muji, I probably wouldn't be able to talk.
Yeah.
Which would probably be okay as well, because you can just hear him talking. But, like, I think I would just be, like, crying the whole time. Because even hearing your heart connection with Muji is just, like, making me cry.
I can, you know, I can remember that when I first went to satsang and I first met Muji Baba, and I remember I said to him, I would like a one-on-one with you. I whispered in his ear, I would like a one-on-one with you. And I mean, I was in satsang. I was so sure that, like, you know, tomorrow he's going to call me. I mean, just responding to what you said just now. And every day I would wait, you know, like, now they'll come and they'll tell me. And what did I want to say to him in that one-on-one? Mm. I really can't recall. Or, you know.
Yeah.
But 5 days passed and no call. And then I saw Shri coming towards me. And I thought, yay, now she's coming to tell me when I'm going to meet him. And she came to me and she said, I have a message for you from Muji Baba. He says, don't be in waiting mode.
Mm.
Every word that he says in satsang is for you.
Mm.
Listen to him because he's speaking to you. Yeah. And was there disappointment? Yeah, the person felt, oh my goodness. So he's not going to meet me one-on-one. What does this message mean? But wow, I have quoted this message and told it to so many people whom I am sure it has helped. It's like, why are you asking for this one-on-one?
Mm.
Why sit in satsang and be fully alive and listen to every word because he's speaking to you?
Mm. It's wonderful.
You know, and just as you said, like, you know, maybe he said no to this, but some other way will come, and his words are anyway, you know, reaching you there in your heart. They're coming out from your mouth. They're like, it's all so perfect. And I mean, just the way, I won't extend it by, like, you know, telling you more stories, but just the way it happened was, when the time was right, I had that one-on-one with him, and it was most beautiful, most significant, and it came at the right moment.
Yeah.
As everything does.
And here it's also like there's something, I suppose, that wants to not see Muji also as different, but to see Muji's heart in everybody.
Oh yes.
And that's very apparent, like, talking to you. It might be more apparent talking, like, it's easier to see it in some people than others, but that's what, like, really what I want. So, you know, so just this kind of conversation, this just kind of affirming that. But also, I think we kind of mentioned it already, but I'm just saying it now because it's in my mind. I usually just say whatever appears in my mind. So one of the things I wanted to say to Muji, if I was going to say something to him, was to ask him to say something about, which we kind of did a little bit already, but about spiritual ego. Because now, of course, if you're experiencing a spiritual ego, you're not going to recognize it. And that's the whole nature of it. And maybe spiritual ego is, I think it can be probably many things, but like you think you know, or you think you've realized, and like, I'm awake now, all this kind of thing. And I know there's a song, I don't know if I'll think of it right now, but there's a song that Muji Sangha sing, or they used to sing in satsang to Muji. And someone was explaining that at the start, and they mentioned something about spirit. This is about our spiritual ego. And they were laughing. And he said, oh yeah, that goes on a very long time. And everyone was laughing, but like, I don't think he was joking, you know. Yeah. And Muji is one example, you know. There's plenty of great teachers in the world as well, but Muji, let's say, has thousands of people following him. And I also believe that many of us are like really kind of waking up and awake and living from our heart. But I feel like there's probably also a lot of spiritual ego. And I think it can come up in anyone at any time. And maybe sometimes it just comes for, like, I've certainly seen spiritual ego in myself. And maybe sometimes I think you don't really see it until it's gone. Yeah. You know, as soon as you see it, then it's gone. But I wonder if you would have anything to say, maybe to help us to be open to seeing spiritual ego in ourselves, or
Well, I think the, you know, the words that you've used are like very indicative. Firstly is to be open and to remain humble and to actually never forget what is the final goal. If your goal is freedom, which you are also equating with dissolving the self, dissolving the small self, dissolving the ego, then this is one of the ways in which it rears its head. It's like, yeah, I know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm like losing my humility, but then what is actually happening
mm-hmm.
is that knowledge is strengthening the ego.
Mm-hmm.
It's not dissolving the ego.
Mm-hmm.
It's not melting. It's actually adding another portfolio to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, I would say, is one of the real blessings of having a guru, is somehow remaining in the position of my head is at your feet.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, because it's when we like, yeah, we may, I mean, you know, I've often talked to Muji Baba also about this. It's like when we first start, we are like, let's say we are racked by the mind. We are troubled. We are dominated by it. Mm-hmm. We do not separate ourselves from it. And then comes a moment when, oh yeah, I, you know, I can recognize the mind. I can flick my attention away from it. I feel like quite a good, well-managed person.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a person.
Yeah.
However, that person is like almost my idea of enlightenment as a person. It's like when I was troubled by my present, I was troubled by my future, I was troubled by thoughts, I was troubled by circumstances. All I wanted was to reach this place where I don't mind the mind, let's say.
Yeah.
That's a nice way of saying I don't mind. And I don't mind, you know, what circumstances are happening around me. I'm fine with almost everything. It feels very enlightened. But here there is still person lurking.
Yeah.
Here is where spiritual ego can come up. And here is where we become comfortable enough in the dynamic existence to forget that the goal is dissolving the person, not just becoming a well-managed person.
Yeah.
And this is where you need, again, I would say, like, if you have the protection and guidance of a master, they can recognize this. They won't let you rest on this plateau.
Yeah.
They won't, they'll push you because they can see, oh yeah, she's doing well. You know, she's doing well. Like many people will use the word, oh, I'm in flow. You know, I'm fine. But have you forgotten that the goal was not just to be a person who's flowing? The goal, ultimate goal is to let the person go, to let the person fully dissolve. And for this, I feel like Sangha, like a live Sangha, a vigilant master, keeps you from forgetting. Because otherwise, in a way, this spiritual ego which comes up at this point is a fall from grace.
Yeah.
It's not that grace abandons you, it'll bring you back. But it can be a distraction. So I feel like this part is like something which, if you do have a master and he is watching over you, you can be saved this unnecessary chai shop.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, like a master being, a master, they are sages. And they know that sometimes somebody needs to go to that chai shop. They need to experience this fall from grace. They need to maybe even be battered again by this ego which is coming up. And they need to recognize it themselves and come back and put their head back. At, you know, because so it's all part of the journey.
Yes.
You know, and at every point we are given this, you know, choice, expand, contract. Love, fear, person, self. So you choose till you don't need to choose.
Yeah.
Every time you choose and you recognize this choice in your heart, then it's not difficult later. You don't need to even choose.
And one thing I wanted to say, just I don't know why, you say that you choose until you don't need to choose.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we can think like that it's better to not need to choose than to choose. But I just want to say, well, I'm really just saying what I feel, so you can say, but I don't feel like one is even better than the other. So if you choose to be in your heart, or you're in your heart without choosing, one is not better than the other. It's okay. You know, because sometimes I think it's just to kind of dispel that idea that, like, if I still need to choose all the time, you know, because I'm faced with this story, like the way you said, you're faced with this story. So if you have to choose, or if it just happens, you're just naturally remain in the heart. It's like, sometimes we can kind of get that idea. I think if I still need to choose, then what? I don't know what the idea would be. Just then I'm not really awake or something, or, you know, I don't know what the idea would be, but just like,
that also the one who thinks that they are not awake is the one who thinks that
it thinking something. I knew the words. So when I said it.
Actually, all words are a little inaccurate.
Yeah.
You know, all words are a little inaccurate, but the words are just there as maybe an aid to somebody who's on the journey and who might recognize it and who might feel it in their own heart in their own way. But there's a truth maybe hidden behind the words, which you catch, and you catch it only when you are there. You know, when you recognize it within, then those words, it's like sometimes you read a book and you, when you reread it, you think, oh, did I read this?
Yeah, pick up different things.
And, you know, you didn't catch it even. So you catch it when you catch it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your love of truth and your love of Moji Baba and sharing your connection with him. And that's really, really, really what I really want to share through this podcast. It's really not about words. It's really that, you know, there's not really, I don't know if there is a way to share it, but that's really, I think that's what wants to happen, is to share that love. And like you say, it's the connection, you know, our connection. So even if it's the connection inwards, like to our heart, or the connection to a guru or a teacher, or just even the connection to someone you love, you know, just connection. that love is, I don't know, I certainly feel it hearing you speaking. So I hope that can come across to anyone who might be listening.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Let's just send our love to everyone who's listening, and just a gentle prayer for them, that they too may find and fulfill whatever is their purpose for this lifetime.
Yes.
And may they find all the guides, teachers, mentors that they need, and that are perfect for them. It was so wonderful to be with you. I mean, it just felt like we've always known each other, as we have.
Yes.
And
we
have. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So much love.
Love you so much. So much love.
Love you so much. Thank you. Okay. Bye, Rohini.
Bye, Amba. Love, beloved.
Bye.